For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Edge of Sports, the podcast brought to you by The Nation magazine. This week, we are talking to Arya Shirazi about all things NBA playoffs. But before we get started and jump right in there, we have a discussion that we need to have, in a brief one, if you will, about Jalen Brunson. And the reason for this has to do with you, the listener, who I have to thank. What's that you say? Me thanking you? Yes, indeed. Because when Arya and I did our much lauded podcast about Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, several people got in contact and said, "I can't believe you're talking about those two Bajica loops before you speak about everything Jalen Brunson," given Brunson being such a remarkable story in the NBA season this year. But I don't want this to be too long because we do want to get to the playoffs. But I'm going to just pose, this is going to be simple. I'm going to pose a question to Arya. Arya's going to answer it, and then we'll move on. Because there's a question about Brunson that there are two narratives about Brunson, and I want to see which one Arya sides with. All right, so first of all, just some basic bio notes for those who don't know anything about Jalen Brunson. Son of a very gritty, a little used NBA player named Rick Brunson. He won two championships during his 3 years at Villanova. And in his last year, he won the Naismith Award as the nation's best college player. He's drafted in the second round by the Dallas Mavericks. And these are his point totals while in Dallas. He scores 9 a game, 8 a game, 13 a game off the bench, and then 16 a game. Then they just let him go. For nothing. They don't try to sign him and trade him. They just say, "All right, we don't want to sign you." Then he signs with the Knicks, averages 24, and then the season after that, this year, averages 29. There are two narratives about Brunson, and this is the question to Arya. The one narrative is that Jalen Brunson is the ultimate underdog, the undersized point guard who somehow dominates inside, not with leaping ability, but a series of deft pivots and post moves. He's someone who gets every last drop out of his talents and someone who's improved every single year. He's gotten bigger, stronger, faster, improved his shooting. He is the ultimate example of the self-made player. The ultimate scrappy underdog. That's one narrative about Brunson. Here's the other narrative. He was always awesome. The Dallas Mavericks and the NBA simply did not realize how good he was because he wasn't passing the vaunted eye test. In other words, he doesn't look like a superstar. Therefore, he was disregarded as one. And that's why he slipped to the second round despite winning the Naismith Award. And that's why Dallas let him walk. They just, for whatever reason, could not see how great he was. So either he's the ultimate scrappy underdog, or he was always great, and the NBA is just filled by dunderheads who couldn't see what they had when it was right in front of them. So, Arya, I throw it to you. Where do you stand on the Jalen Brunson question? Was the NBA just slow to figure out how good he was, or did he really work his ass off, and he is the ultimate underdog?
The short answer is the second one, is that he's always been great. In every stop of his basketball life so far, he's been great. So should he have been slept on? Should he have been underrated like that? Clearly, no. You saw greatness in Brunson far before I did, and apparently before many people did. You have always pegged Jalen as not only a spectacular college player and college champion, but somebody whose game would instantly translate to being a lead guard in the NBA. I didn't necessarily see that. Jalen comes to Dallas and immediately proves that he's better than a second round pick. But as you said, the progression is slow in his first few years. He's an instant contributor, but he's off the bench playing on a team run by rookie sensation Luka Doncic. And what he does in his first few years. And while Jalen is an essential contributor to those Dallas teams and the improvement Dallas shows in his time there, obviously he doesn't really get a chance to truly flourish until he gets to New York. But even then, when Dallas foolishly let him go and he signed with the Knicks, you were absolutely ecstatic. I didn't see this necessarily as a star-making role or a cosmic shift in the fortunes of the Knicks. I feel as though we found occasion to talk Brunson on a few different episodes that we've done. And Brunson, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more when we discuss the Knicks postseason prospects, Brunson had a great first year for the Knicks, an all-star caliber year. He didn't quite make the team, but he played like an all-star all year long and propelled the Knicks to a somewhat surprising playoff positioning. This year, he has taken it to a completely different level and levels. And it also seems that each time we talk about him on an episode, by the next time we speak, he's improved even more. He's taken his game. What he has done in the second half, after a pretty great first half, is somewhat mind-boggling. And I say that because as the many other essential pieces of the Knicks have gone down to either lengthy absences or season-ending injuries, Brunson has picked up his play and has literally carried the Knicks on his back to a second place finish in the East, what I consider a surprising second place finish in the East. And we had talked about the Mavericks a couple of weeks ago and their two guards and how they seem to be peaking at the perfect time. Brunson is playing as well as anybody in the NBA right now. And would I have said that was possible even at the beginning of this year? No. Would I have said that at the beginning of his career? Absolutely not. So it should not have been a surprise about what a solid NBA player he is. The histories of many fantastic college All-Americans and most outstanding players in NCAA championship victories, we've seen that that does not always translate to NBA success. So I think those who doubted Brunson, as you said, had that were looking maybe only at the numbers,
yeah,
and only at what they consider to be the prototype for a future NBA superstar. I feel as though Brunson instantly proved the doubters wrong with his ability to excel in the league. And I would be surprised if anybody outside of the Brunson family predicted that he would be as outstanding as he is.
Agreed 1,000%. I have nothing to add to that except to say, with utter humility, like, I saw him as somebody who could be a player in the NBA who started 17 points, 8 assists, running a team, you know, like the number two scorer. You know, I really saw on a playoff team. That's what I saw as a ceiling, which really wasn't being said. The idea that he's going to go to New York City, which does put an extra luster on it, whether people want to admit it or not, and dropping 29 a game, and carrying a team without all-star Julius Randle, without OG Anunoby for a big part of the season, is nothing short of a remarkable testament to to his work ethic. I mean, that has to be part of it too, because he is bigger, he is stronger, he is bouncing off people more, he is finishing through contact more. And so much credit to Jalen Brunson. He's been a joy to watch. And now let's get to see whether he's good enough to get through the 76ers in the first round of the playoffs.
I watched a lot of Knicks down the stretch as they were jockeying for playoff positioning, and they won that race. And it seemed as though every single time the Knicks needed a basket, Brunson provided it, and there were fourth quarters where it seemed as though he was scoring on every single possession. And as you said up front, the fact that he does not have explosive athletic ability and is also not a dead-eye three-point shooter. Range is not the strength of his game. The way in which he was getting those points and those crucial points in the most important games of the season was the most impressive aspect to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, over 40% from three, which is great, but n not
I guess that is pretty damn great.
that's
Sorry,
pretty
Jalen.
damn great. but a huge jump in that regard, and also much more of a like he's situational from three. He's not Steph Curry, you know, like, all right, if I'm open from three, that's a definite shot no matter where I am on the court. So very efficient, great numbers, 48% from the field, very high percentage on twos. What a player. All right. Well, hopefully he can get. I mean, I have a prediction that is going to shock you, but we'll move on to from that. So this is what we're going to do. We're going
I'm
to
not as easily shocked as you think, Dave.
really. How do you like a Knicks Mavericks finals?
That would be shocking.
There you go. Okay. Well, let's just stick with the first round for now. But, you know, like Jontay Porter might say, that's where my money's going, baby. Okay. Let's go through it. I mean, some of these we can go through in very quick order, and some of them might require some serious thought. Let's go through the East and see what you think. I mean, first you have the Celtics, the number one seed, statistically an all-time great team in terms of point differential. I mean, they're only behind the two Bulls Jordan teams in terms of point differential historically. So if they win a championship, they will be looked at as this historically great team. From when we're recording this podcast, we just saw the East play-in, first round play-in games. So the Celtics will be playing either a Miami Heat team without Jimmy Butler, who's now out for weeks, and that means for the whole playoffs, and in my mind, and or they're going to play a frisky Chicago Bulls team, which is now being led improbably by Kobe White, who dropped 42 points to knock out the wretched Atlanta Hawks and put them out of their misery. So Celtics versus Heat or Bulls, what can you really say? And any thoughts there beyond the discursive conventional wisdom?
First of all, before we get to that specific series, let me say up front, we were supposed to record this show yesterday. And if we had, my predictions would have been much different, actually, than they are today. In general, not just in the first round, but my postseason predictions. But I feel as though I woke up today with some much needed clarity. And maybe a little more sanity. So,
Might say sobriety.
some might say that. Don't quote me on that. The other thing I will say, which will be a theme throughout just about every series that we talk about, is injuries. Injuries are they are in a way the biggest factor. And it seems as though it's been that way for the last many years, actually. Maybe it was always that way, but I don't remember injuries and so many injuries to so many key players on so many teams being as dominant a factor as it's been recently, and certainly as it is this year. You mentioned Butler and his incredibly unfortunate injury against the Sixers, which is going to take him out of their game against the Bulls. And if they make it, their series against the Celtics. In the night before, in a play-in loss, Zion Williamson is now pretty much out for the postseason. Giannis, I would be surprised if we saw Giannis in the first round at all. So obviously that is a huge subtraction for however long that he's out of the lineup. And Damian Lillard, who is going to play even a larger role in any success that Milwaukee might have, is also far from at 100%, and is trying to, the trainers are frantically trying to get him ready to be able to play game one against Indiana. Kawhi Leonard out west. The Clippers say that he's going to be in the lineup, but as always, his health and his availability is iffy. And those are just four, but four all-world performers. I'm sure as we get into other matchups, we'll remember other injuries, which could swing a series one way or the other. But I just wanted to make the obvious point that who is available for certain teams, and a team going into the playoffs relatively healthy as opposed to a team that already knows that it has to adjust to one of their main guys or main guy, will definitely alter not only the projections, but how things ultimately play out.
Yeah. Well said all around. The heartbreak in that entire statement was Zion for me, having his best game as a pro, making LeBron James and Anthony Davis look very mortal and even old, and being the Zion that we dreamed of when he was at Duke. 40 points, 11 rebounds, tie game, and then he lands and immediately he knows. And then he's gone and they lose. I didn't like that at all. I had a lot. I actually was feeling all this empathy for the guy because that was his first playoff game. And it wasn't even a playoff game. It was a play-in game. But that was his first postseason game. He even played like crap in the in-season tournament. I mean, this was him really ready for prime time. And so that was a bummer.
Super drag.
Yeah. Injuries are the worst. We come up with all kinds of theories about why there are more now. But let's go to the playoffs.
Okay, so Celtics. Celtics series. As you said, tomorrow night, Miami will play Chicago to see who's going to play Boston. Boston is clearly the favorite going into the East, and I'm sure the heavy favorite to win it all. I definitely wanted Miami to play Boston. The Heat last year came in almost the exact same situation, defeated Chicago at home to get eight, and then upset number one Milwaukee to make a run to the finals. A very, very strong looking Bucks team at that time. But because it was the Heat, and because it was Spoelstra's Heat, and because it was Butler's Heat, it wasn't as shocking, I think, as it would have been if it was almost any other team doing that. So while not expecting that to be duplicated this year against the Celtics, I was certainly hoping that it would, and had a much better chance of occurring with Butler in the lineup. Unfortunately, it now looks as though whoever survives tomorrow, the Heat without their prime, their engine, and also someone who pretty much annually raises his already all-star performance to all-world level in the playoffs, plus Chicago, a team very talented on paper who rarely has their full team together, and also has a fantastic clutch player in DeMar DeRozan. I think whoever emerges from there, it'll be lucky if it goes five games.
Yeah. You saw what happened in the Heat 76ers play-in game when Jimmy, playing in the fourth quarter, but not even touching the ball. He had, I believe, one shot in the fourth quarter, and it was off a steal and a dunk. I mean, so they were running in exclusively through Tyler Hero, and I'm sorry, but if your fourth quarter postseason offense is running the ball exclusively through Tyler Hero, who I believe had 25 points on 26 shots, that ain't happening. I'm sorry. Sorry, Tyler, but you know, these tough takes are part of what it's all about, baby. All right, that's an easy one. The Celtics are dominant. It's so funny because I don't even think the Celtics deserve a player first team All-NBA. I really don't. I think Brunson deserves it over Tatum. But when you're talking about, like, when you're doing that little game of who are the best players in the series, like if you had to draft off of the teams – I mean, the Celtics, I don't care if they're playing the Bulls or the Heat without Jimmy Butler, the Celtics are going to have like the first five people if you were doing like a draft, like, or DeRozan maybe four. I don't know, but you got to put Tatum, Brown, Derek White, Zingis, not Zingis, yeah, DeRozan.
Or White, Zingis. Certainly.
Okay.
I think DeMar would be the second or third best player on Boston.
Woo! All right.
I don't know that Jaylen Brown is demonstrably better than DeMar. DeMar's still great.
DeMar is still
great. It's likely my Beantown bias, which I intend to share throughout this entire episode.
Oh, my God. You know, it's the beans in Boston that make Chicago the Windy City. Don't forget that.
Ooh, that was quick.
Thank you.
Well done, Dave.
Thank you. And, you know, playing that with the Boston-Chicago matchup, you see, it all connects. All right, here's one that's I've been both looking forward and dreading talking to you about. Our second seed New York Knicks playing the seventh seed Philadelphia 76ers. All I'll say before you jump in is that when I saw the 76ers play the Heat and the intensity's amped up, I thought Embiid, playing the most minutes he's played since he's been back from his injury, looked kind of gassed. And I've been scared about this series for the Knicks because of the Embiid question. I personally like the Knicks in seven in a very tough series. Your thoughts?
If we had recorded this episode yesterday, I would have come in predicting the 76ers to win the championship. I like to think of myself as a more sophisticated basketball fan than to be swayed so severely by one game. I like to think that I look at a bigger body of work to make my decisions and to formulate my impressions. And I wrote to you in the last day or two, off the cuff, that if the Knicks draw the Sixers in the first round, I think it'll be a sweep.
Yeah.
On the Sixers part. On the Sixers part.
I dropped my phone in the toilet when you said that. Go
ahead. I'm sorry about that, man.
Yeah, it happens.
And again, I don't like to make such drastic swings based on one game. Embiid looked gassed 90 seconds into the game last night. He did not look like himself until about 4 minutes were left in the game. Mm-hmm. For that entire first quarter and pretty much the first half, the Sixers looked like they could not get a shot, looked like they could not run their offense. Miami's defense on Embiid, I had never seen him almost as seemingly disengaged at times as he was with the other players, scrambling often in vain to keep Philly in the game. when by the time crunch time occurred, Embiid came up with the kind of plays that great players come up with when seasons are on the line, or certain seeding is on the line. Then again, what made it so puzzling, and to Miami's credit, was that Embiid's been back in the lineup for about 10 games now, and Philly has not lost since he has returned, giving them the momentum, which is why my feelings about that team were what they were. And while he had been on a minutes restriction after being out for 2 months after knee surgery, even in those shorter minutes, he was putting up familiar performances. He was still kind of routinely scoring more points than he played minutes. And as I said, they were only winning. They have not lost since he returned. So I felt as though they had great momentum, in addition to matching up very well against some of the teams that they would be going up against. I feel as though the Knicks is a very favorable matchup for the 76ers, which was why my sweet prediction existed like it did. The series is going to start at Madison Square Garden. The crowd's going to be really, really lit for game one, of course, and for this entire series to be hosting. But I truly believe that had Embiid not gone down, Philly would absolutely have finished second in the East. This is a rough matchup for the Knicks to draw after having such a fantastic season and thrilling end to the season to grab number two against teams who are certainly forecasted to finish ahead of them. So, and again, I don't want to put too much on a lethargic performance last night in a big game that ultimately, when they needed to pull it out, they pulled it out, which is what great teams do. In a way, it reminded me of a number one seed or a great seed in the NCAA tournament who's predicted to go very far is outplayed by a less heralded opponent in the early rounds and rallies to win a game that they should not win. Often that propels that team, getting narrowly upset, propels that team to the championship that they were predicted to. It's happened many times during March Madness. That's what the Sixers' victory reminded me of last night. They
Reminded of
pulled.
Tyus Edney hitting a running layup over Missouri, propelling
Yep.
UCLA to the 95 championship.
That is the perfect example of my analogy. Thank you. So, knowing that I was watching the team that I was going to predict to win it all, struggling like that, and then pulling it out, momentarily reinforced my feelings about the Sixers' prospects over the next couple of months. Going back to the Knicks series, I just and again, Brunson is playing so well that it would be ignorant to totally count out a team that he is leading. But honestly, Dave, I don't see it. I just don't. I think Philly is just too good, too great at the superstar position with better depth. And the flip side of that might be it might not be a great omen if if Nicholas Batum's performance is what gets you a victory. And without Batum, they certainly would have lost to the Heat, possibly by double digits. But again, it's players like that. It is the Batums who step up when they need to, maybe if only for one game, that lead to long playoff runs. So that was a long and winding way of saying I'm picking the Sixers to win this series, and I would be surprised if it goes more than five.
Surprised if it goes more than five?
I'm picking Sixers in five.
Wow. I'm going to actually dial mine down to say Knicks in six. I just disagree about the matchup. I think home.
You were so offended by my prediction that you
that
you locked the game up.
Six. I think that the Knicks have the whiff of destiny about them, having watched them all year. So we'll see how that plays itself out. I do love the way Mitchell Robinson is playing on his return. Isaiah Hartenstein is. I mean, I like the idea of what they can do to a tired, gassed Embiid. And we'll see what happens. I think also the Heat found a bit of a secret sauce in defending Embiid, and then they got away from it, which is that kind of collapsing zone on him. And the more – remember, Batum didn't get super hot till the second half. And so the more Philly, especially just the what the hell happened to him, Tobias Harris – throwing up brick after brick, it seemed to frustrate and tire Embiid. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see what happens. I feel strongly that the Knicks core is better than the Sixers core. And even if the Sixers have a greater depth, knowing how Tibbs likes to play his team, I mean, he may burn the Knicks out. Of that, there's no doubt, before this playoff run is done, but I like him over the Sixers.
The last I'll say on it is that something else in Philly's favor, I think, is that Nick Nurse is a great coach.
True.
As is Thibodeau. I'm not saying Philly's winning the coaching matchup, but if the Heat showed the blueprint to frustrating the Sixers and containing Embiid in a way that no other team seems to, while I believe in Thibodeau's ability to alter his defensive scheme slightly to capitalize on that, I also have faith in Nurse in recognizing what frustrated his team and how to counter that. And they had a spectacular second half after an abysmal first half. So he even made in-game adjustments that took them to victory. So it should be a lot of fun. We'll see how it happens. You and I feel very differently about this. So we'll see who's buying who shots.
I will see who's buying who shots. I don't know. Maybe I'll get Jonte Porter to place a bet with me. Oh, I don't know.
Back to the well.
Back to the well. Okay. I think that was an interesting chat. Let's go to, because it's so crazy, because like my picks, that's a pretty chalk pick, a number two team over a number seven team, but not really, because the 76ers are kind of the fakest seven team in years because of the Embiid injury. It changes everything. I totally agree that the Sixers would have been the number two seed coming out of the East, if not for all of this. But I do like the Knicks, the way they're playing, mamma mia. Okay, Bucks Pacers. Now I'm going to start surprising folks. Interesting, Giannis out, Lillard playing like crapola. Pacers can drop 83.5 without blinking. A very underrated story in these whole playoffs, maybe because Indiana's a small market, is that since Pascal Siakam has come onto the team, they've gone from, by a country mile, the worst defensive team in the NBA, to ranked about 15th in defense. That ain't bad if you can drop 83 points and a half. And if Halliburton even gains is like 90% of what he was at the start of the year. I mean, I like the Pacers in six. Like, I got no faith in these Bucks whatsoever. No faith in Doc Rivers, who's coached them to a. I mean, we talk about Nick Nurse. Doc Rivers has some coaching, coached them to a sub 500 record, 15 and 17, after they started, I think, 34 and 12 or something, under the much criticized Adrian Griffin. Looking back, it's like 34 and 12. That's kind of amazing. 15 and 17 under Doc. So I like the Pacers. I'm a big believer. You talk about coaching, big believer in Rick Carlisle, championship coach. Doc Rivers, I mean, yes, a championship back in the aughts with the Celtics, but you might as well say that team was coached by Kevin Garnett and Tom Thibodeau, actually, who was the defensive coach on that team. So to you, Ari, Bucks, Pacers, who do you like?
I think the fashionable pick is the Pacers right now. And not fashionable in a flimsy way, but when you look at where both teams are at and the matchups, I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm the birth of these playoffs, I think, has put me in somewhat of a contrary state. And I'm picking the Bucks.
Interesting.
I'm picking the Bucks not to be contrary, but because I think they're going to win. I think even without Giannis, and I agree with you about the coaching. I think Carlisle is fantastic. I think Doc did a great job with the Celtics all those years ago. I'm not going to. I don't think that he was just the eye candy. I think that he did a fantastic job with that team and was great during his Celtics tenure, which was three teams ago and a fairly long time now. I made my thoughts on Doc's current coaching acumen clear a couple of months ago when I strongly criticized Milwaukee for jettisoning Griffin while that team was winning a lot more than they were losing for Doc. And at least the rest of that season seem to support my initial feelings about it. So I really have no good reason for picking Milwaukee over Indiana. Indiana is playing better. As you said, they have that offense that seems to be putting up 130 points every single game, plus their improved defense that you've referenced. It seems as though Indiana's heading up. Milwaukee's going in the other direction. They've lost, at least for the short term, their all everything forward, top five player in the NBA. And I think it's because of all of those rational points which lead towards the Pacers that I'm picking the Bucks. I like to look at, I don't just ever look at just the stars. I'm big on depth. I'm big on combinations. I'm big on different looks depending on the players that you have and the support players that you have. And I don't know. There's something about I'm feeling Bobby Portis right now.
Okay.
And I'm feeling like he is going to have a really big series in a way that really helps Milwaukee compensate as much as they can for the loss of Antetokounmpo. Indiana has had that crazy offense all year, and I guess I just don't know why. I guess I don't know why they're, I guess I just don't love their players. And sometimes it's just about how much you like a team's collection of players. I'm not trying to deny what Indiana has accomplished, but none of their players really knock me out. And Haliburton should, and he's great, but he didn't play great ball in the last post All-Star break. Again, it didn't really slow down the Pacers' offensive numbers too much, and Siakam has been a huge addition, as we knew he would on both ends of the floor. But Very often, it's just a matter for me of looking at who the two teams have.
Yeah.
And I just like Milwaukee's players more. And because they're really being slept on, I'm picking them to take this series in six. And maybe not extend their playoff run any longer, but I think they're going to survive this one.
Well, you certainly could be right. I just think that you talked about depth. The only Bucks player who's been playing good ball is Bobby Portis. It's a death zone after that. And I actually like a lot of the people on the secondary level of that Pacers team. I like Nembhard. I like Jalen Smith. I like a lot of these guys who they can bring in. I know TJ is having a good year, a really good year, like making a, like I heard one commentator say, this guy's making a late run for sixth man. I mean,
I agree that he should be in the conversation.
and if you're talking about who's going to guard TJ and who's going to guard Haliburton, you're talking about a generationally bad defensive player in Damian Lillard. And that's going to be a very tough matchup. Tribute to Lillard's amazing offensive skills that he was in that top 75 list of NBA players, something I don't think he particularly deserved, but that's not neither here nor there. But the point is that, I mean, a lot of Steve Nash vibes is all I'm saying from Dame Lillard. Yeah, I said it. All right, so now the next one, and who knows, are we only going to get through the East? I don't think so. We're going to push it. Cavs Magic. All right. The Cavs have insulted the basketball gods deeply because in their last game of the year, they throw the game. They throw the game against the Charlotte freaking Hornets. Just basically a G League team. And with a coach who'd already been fired coaching the team and Steve Clifford. They're interviewing people to replace him while he's coaching them. The Cavs have a lead in the fourth quarter, and for those who haven't seen what they did next is they brought in all their centers off the bench to play, four of them, and their point guard was damn near 7 foot tall, Amani Bates, who was once a huge prospect, and now he's the last guy on the bench there. So they ran an Amani Bates-led team. They got outscored, what, something like 18-2. They lose the
I
game.
think
Sorry, go.
they were going to Tristan Thompson down the stretch.
Yes, they were feeding Tristan Thompson down the stretch. I mean, it was wretched. And they did it so they could play the Magic. Now, the Magic are not a very talented offensive team, but they are mean. They are a mean defensive team. Jalen Suggs, Paolo Banchero, Jonathan Isaac, these guys are mean defenders, and they're going into this series pissed off. Like, oh, you want to play us? Well, we're going to give you a chop right to the temple if you don't come at us, if you come at us too soft. So I actually like the Magic to trounce them in six and have people, and JB Bickerstaff loses his job, and Donovan Mitchell starts pining to play in New York City again, and all sorts of fallout from this from the Cavs. When you violate the sacred pact between team and basketball gods, then the basketball gods shall smite thee, especially against a team as mean as the Magic. That's what I say.
Philosophically, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Cleveland did not want to play Philly, and so
They threw a
they
game.
totally, totally, and there should be karma for that. They should have to pay for that. I'm picking Cleveland to win this series. Probably in seven. I really like the Cavs team. I did at the beginning of the year. I like JB Bickerstaff as well. I think he's a very good coach. I think he has a great balance of offensive and defensive philosophies. When this team is, I think he, until the last 2 weeks of the season, that team overachieved, I think, considering that they hardly ever had their full complement of rotation players together. Almost every single important player on that team missed a substantial period of time at one point, and with patchwork lineups and having to adjust to who you had on the floor, particularly offensively, so what you were going to feature to score, I thought that he was making the right moves and kept them into contention for the number two spot until the last game of the season, which you already said they should have nabbed. So I really like Orlando. I really like Orlando's team. I agree that I love the intensity. I love the physical nature with which they play. I love the attitude, and I really like the players too. That is a fantastic forward combination of Banchero and Franz Wagner. If they can keep those forwards together for the next 10 years, they're going to win a lot of games and some playoff rounds, and those two guys are going to make a shitload of all-star appearances. Paolo's already had one. So this should be a really good series. I'm excited, really excited to see how this one plays out. Old habits die hard for me. And sometimes I don't lose crushes that quickly. And the fact that I just like Cleveland's team and they have 8 or 9 players that I really, really like individually and I think work really well together. I mean, Mobley and Allen is a fantastic, I think, 4-5 combination of serious defensive length and complement each other offensively. I think Mobley's going to be a really, really good player in this league for a while. Though slightly undersized, when healthy, that is a fantastic backcourt.
I just can't get out of my head about how soft Allen and Mobley were last year against the Knicks and how they got pushed around. And Orlando is tough like the Knicks were tough.
A lot can change in a year. They know they got pushed around. They have they've had a season to think about that.
Yeah. So yeah, that is true. So, that is true. We'll see what happens on that one. I don't know. I don't think Allen and Mobley. I mean, when Mobley was hurt, it seemed like Allen was empowered, and then it also gave Max Strus more minutes. It allowed them to spread the floor out more. I think when they're not as good as the sum of their parts, they could use some addition by subtraction, and I'm going to stick with the Magic. I think they're just nasty enough to do this.
We'll see. I totally agree with you that if Cleveland doesn't get out of the first round, we're going to see a decidedly different squad next year. I think because I like this team and I don't want them to break up, I think maybe I'm trying to will them to some postseason success.
Right on. All right, let's go to the West. You got time to go to the West?
Got all the time in the world.
Let's stick with this first round action. OKC, we'll start there. The shock number one seed, Oklahoma City, as Jontay Porter told me before we got on the air. Before the season in Vegas, OKC was the over-under on number of games they'd win was at 44.5. And, you know, finishing with well over, I believe, 53 wins is what they finished with. Number one seed in the West in a stacked Western Conference. Hell of an accomplishment. And for their troubles, they're probably going to play the Sacramento Kings, I think, as they're going to be going against Zion-less New Orleans Pelicans team. But whether they play a hobbled Pelicans team or an ascendant Kings team who looked terrific against the Warriors. I mean, I think I believe in OKC. I believe in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I believe that they'll win in 5 games. I believe in this team. I really do. I think their coach, Mark Dagenault, is going to be coach of the year for a reason. I think Jalen Williams, J-Dub, not J-Will, is should be the most improved player this year and is – remarkable to watch. We saw him against the Knicks go 14 for 18 in a game and look like the best player on the court. So I like OKC.
I have a lot to respond to, and I will try not to take forever to say it all. First of all, I think the Pelicans are going to beat the Kings. New Orleans, while Zion's health might be essential in New Orleans' prospects of going far at all, they would need Zion and a healthy Zion. New Orleans has spent a lot of time over the past few years without him and winning games without him. So I like New Orleans squad. Clearly with Williamson, as I said, that bumps up their potential considerably, but even without him, I like their team. And Sacramento is somewhat decimated. I was surprised they beat the Warriors, but that's one game against a not fantastic Warriors team who's really kind of questioning what direction that team is going to take even as early as next year. But the Kings have suffered unfortunate injuries to the same position at the worst time. Keegan Murray is a nice player and had a very good game against the Warriors. Losing both Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter, I think, are brutal. And as great as Sabonis and Fox are, and they are great, both should have been All-Stars this year and weren't, I just don't think it's enough. So I definitely have the Pelicans at home advancing to the playoffs as the number eight. Before the play-in started, I think I shared with you that whoever the Thunder draw, whether it's the Lakers or Pelicans, no, I said whether they draw the Lakers or the Pelicans, I have the Thunder losing.
Huh.
That was when Williamson was playing. He had a great game against the Lakers. That really sucks, as you already said. With Williamson, I saw the Thunder having no answer to that. And Herb Jones, as fantastic a year as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has had, and he really has, I would put him top three or four MVP. And if anybody put him number one, I wouldn't really question that.
Me too.
With how much winning they've done with the team that he has. Mark Daigneault is, to me, absolutely coach of the year, for sure. But again, I think that it comes down to preference or just kind of how you feel about a team. And everybody just loves the Thunder. And I don't. So it's kind of similar to the Pacers. I'm not trying to deny what they've accomplished. And I think it's very, very impressive because even watching them, I can't figure out why they're as successful as they are. But I am taking the Pelicans over the Kings, and I'm taking the Pelicans over the Thunder in the first round without Zion playing. Herb Jones is a fantastic defensive player.
Certainly is.
And I think Shai's going to get his numbers. And Daigneault knows that Herb Jones is a really good perimeter defender who's going to be hawking Shai. And so they're planning for that. They're game planning for that. And they'll come prepared. But I think Jones' ability to make Gilgeous work really, really hard. And Shai is such an efficient player. That's what's made his season so spectacular. Routinely shooting 13 for 17 to get his 38 points. But I think Jones is enough of a defensive factor, again, to affect Shai, to affect the Thunder's offense and how it is run. And I just like the rest of the Pelicans players more. I'll take McCollum, Trey Murphy, Valanciunas, and Jones over the Thunder's next four guys. And probably nobody else will. Holmgren's had a terrific rookie year in probably the first of what's going to be a great career for him. And I completely agree with what you said about Jalen Williams.
Yeah.
Really, really good player. Future all-star. Ahead of the curve, I think, in year two.
You will be the only one. I mean, a lot of people don't have the Pelicans making it past the Kings without Zion. So we'll see what happens there.
When it happens, it'll be all the sweeter for me.
Pelicans, OKC, Shiraz has the Pellies. Unbelievable. Okay.
Mark it, dude.
Marking it down. So far, by the way, we haven't planned this. We've literally agreed on one series, and that's the Boston one.
That's why I love talking to you, man.
Well, this one, I hope we...
And I didn't even want to pick Boston to win in series one, but...
No, I didn't either. Are you kidding me? I would have picked against them just for the purposes of adding to the collective energy in the world, rooting against them, hoping that that affects Jason Tatum in yet another poor clutch performance. All right. Nuggets, Lakers. I think we're going to agree on this. The Nuggets are the number two team, the overwhelming favorite, according to the betting markets in the West, to make their way out. They have the best two-man game in the league with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. Jokic looking like the MVP this year, even though I wouldn't vote for him. KCP, great role player. Michael Porter Jr., as long as he's not taking bets from Jante. All right, I got to stop doing that.
Number three.
Yes, and you know they have some. Their bench is suspect a little bit dicey, but I love the Aaron Gordon baseline moves. The Lakers have shown they've lost something like eight straight to the Nuggets. Can't see that changing. Past is prologue in this case. I do think the Lakers will put up a fight. Nuggets in six.
This has been such an enjoyable season for me as a fan. As we talked about recently, outside of the Celtics kind of end-to-end dominance, just about everything else in both conferences came down to the final day. And I love that. I love that close competition, that parity. That to me makes for a great season and the potential for a knockout postseason and one that's really hard to call, as it should be. On our last episode, when talking about the Mavs, you said that most people, are assuming that it's going to be Celtics Nuggets, or that's the favorite. And I think you're absolutely right. And even hearing you say that antagonized me slightly, even though I know that it's true. And maybe it's just because that's not the matchup that I want to see. But also, I feel as though a lot of the teams have earned consideration into that category. Even though, again, it makes perfect sense that those would be the two teams that most would be predicting to be standing at the end. The reason I thought to launch into that was when you talked about the Nuggets bench and you said that it was suspect. I'll go beyond that. I think it's the worst bench in the NBA, or at least the worst bench of any playoff team. It is a testament to that starting lineup, which is not the most talented in the league, far from it, but it is the absolutely ideal five to be built around the best player in the league.
Singular.
And especially the best player in the league who plays like that.
Yes.
And who plays relative to the other four players on the court with him. So, but there's two opposing schools of thought. One is, in the playoffs, rotations tighten and starters play even more. And that definitely speaks to the Nuggets' advantage, not only in their first round series, but in trying to defend their championship. The flip side of that is, it's also kind of common speak that depth, how important depth is in the playoffs and in trying to make long postseason runs, the adjustments you can make rotationally. And we already talked about how much injuries play into the picture. We're only talking about the injuries that have already happened. If players go down in playoff series, who is able to replace them? And are teams able to compensate for that loss? The Nuggets, to me, are the team least capable of losing not only their superstar, but any starter. I don't think that they can replace any starter because, again, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is the perfect guy to play at the two in the backcourt with Murray and alongside Jokic. That forward combination of Gordon and Porter, yeah, really nice players, above average starters, but a lot of better forward combinations in the league on paper. Perfect front court mates for Jokic.
And Porter's had a sneaky good year in terms of his shooting splits.
And just a excellent offensive player. If he's your third option, you have a really good third option, and they do.
Yeah.
And you've talked about the chemistry and the relationship between Jokic and Murray. That doesn't have to be analyzed. They've won a championship with that already. But again, the fact that if I don't believe in the Celtics bench, which I really don't, I absolutely don't believe in Denver's. I think that they are going to
the Lakers.
No, I'm going to pick the Nuggets.
Okay.
I'm picking the Nuggets in a tough series. Six or seven. I don't think that it's going to be a cakewalk. I don't think it's just going to be a tune-up. Yes, I know Denver's had a lot of success against the Lakers, not only in last year's conference finals, but also this year. So maybe that's just a good matchup for the Nugs.
Yeah, the Lakers can't seem to beat them. I mean, past his prologue, we have to look at that.
But it's LeBron, and it's Davis, and it's D'Lo, and some other good players, very good players.
Yeah.
Around great players. So picking Denver, but not as handily as most probably are.
The crazy thing is that other than the Mavs, I think I would have the Lakers beating every other team in the West. I really do. I love their vibe right now, but I think the Nuggets just have their number. All right, we have two more series to go, and our shot clock is winding down, and they're the two most interesting series.
Extend that clock, man.
Oh, man. I have to catch a plane. All right, here's the thing about these two other series. I think in this first one, we're going to disagree pretty strongly. That first one is the number three, could have been number one ranked Timberwolves against the Phoenix Suns. The T-Wolves are the best defensive team in the NBA. They're anchored by the best defensive player in the NBA, arguably, in Rudy Gobert. He will win Defensive Player of the Year. Wemby might be better than him right now, but Gobert over the whole season, anchoring the number one defense, it's correct that he's the favorite to win DPOY. On what's going to be a Hall of Fame career, and that's going to shock people, but you look at the numbers, it's going to happen. And Anthony Edwards, who's got, you know, more charisma and guts in his little finger than most players have in their whole body. I love these guys. You know, I went to college in the Twin Cities. I got some T-Wolf shirts that have Pooh Richardson on them. You know, I go back with these guys. But I really do like the experience and firepower on the Suns. I like that Kevin Durant has been here a million times. I like that Devin Booker really led a team to the finals. And frankly, I very much like Bradley Beal. And that might be some DC bias, but a healthy Bradley Beal who had a great playoff career until the Wizards decided to never make the playoffs again, which frankly has been a long time. I like the Suns in this series. Like as you said before, the rotation shortened this time of year, and the superior T-Wolves bench just matters less. And the T-Wolves have had an amazing season. The Suns are playing for the life of the organization because if they lose, disaster. And they have very little to work with other than a newly signed Grayson Allen. So I think the T-Wolves defense is great. I think the Suns offense in a playoff format is better. I like the Suns in seven.
As the polished podcast host that you are, you have been responsibly restricting your remarks to the first round of the playoffs, which is what we're talking about. I, on the other hand, have been jumping all over the place, jumping into the future from the start. And I'll continue that irresponsibility by saying that, first off, I think whoever comes out of this series is going to the finals.
Excellent. I love that
I
hot
think
take.
whoever I
Boom.
think whoever wins Wolves Suns is going to go to the finals.
Love it.
And I'm going to show
Bet
my ass
it
even more by saying that I think that the Wolves are going to win the series and going to win the championship this year.
in my hands.
So I think it's going to be an incredibly tough series for the Wolves. I think they drew the worst team that they could have won. I think part of the reason that I'm irritated by all the Thunder love is that the Thunder are number one because three teams finished tied for first, which again shows what a balanced season this was. And in the convoluted NBA format of how you decide a three-way tie, the Thunder came out one. The Wolves, who really were in first place for the majority of the season, and after a player I don't even think you mentioned, Karl-Anthony Towns, went down late for a month,
That was on purpose.
many predicted that they would fall into the play-in. And they didn't. The Wolves beat the Thunder in the season series and the Nuggets in the season series. So I don't actually understand why they're three and not one. If they had just been tied with either of those other two teams, they would have been one. Somehow they kind of lost out on being on the three-way tie.
Well, they were
And
one game behind. The Thunder
oh.
gets both 157. The T-Wolves 156.
All right. Another one of my errors.
I Googled.
Anywho, oh well, I guess that makes a lot more sense why the Thunder won. Maybe I should have done a little research in anticipation of this discussion, but that's not really how I roll.
I love the T-Wolves title prediction. That's powerful.
The Wolves again. I think they drew an opponent that they didn't want in the first round. It's a tough series for them, a tough matchup for them. But it's also, in a way, a very tough matchup for the Suns. The Suns are super interesting. I think they have the most explosive offensive starting five. They're the only team with three players who have been legitimate threats to win an NBA scoring title.
Great call. People don't give people that credit.
Grayson Allen turned out to be the perfect fifth starter for that team. Not only did he lead the league in three-point shooting percentage, and is just a very good all-around offensive player all around, but because he plays alongside three high-volume scorers, Allen has become by default the defensive stopper on that team. Allen is always assigned, he gets the Jrue Holiday assignment, pretty much. One through three, at least. I don't think he guards that many fours, but one through three, whoever the opponent's biggest threat is, he guards them to take the the pressure and the workload off of Booker and Beal, even if he's not the most ideally situated for that role. Being that they're built around four offensive players, they actually have the perfect center in Nurkic. Nurkic had a great year this year. I think he grabbed 30 some odd rebounds. The only player to grab over 30 rebounds in a game this year, had a few like 27 rebound games. Nurk's always been a very solid center, possibly the strongest guy in the entire league, and a great guy to have in the middle around kind of a decidedly non-gritty, super talented finesse offensive team. I won't be surprised if the Suns prevail in this series. You're predicting them to win a game 7 on the road.
Yes, very much.
That would be quite the that would be a great win for them. And the Target Center crowd is really on right now because they have so much to cheer for, which has not been that team's history. So the Wolves have a really nice home court this year, but the Suns are not going to be shook by that. So if Phoenix comes out of it, I think they're winning the West, but I don't think they're coming out of it.
Wow. Last one. I should say before the season began, I had Suns Bucks in the finals. I'm changing that dramatically to have the Knicks in the finals out of the East, as I said. And out of the West, one could certainly argue the winner of this matchup will come out of the West. That would be Clippers Mavs. And I like the Mavs in this. I like them in 6. These teams have had battles in the past. Harden is not playing well. Kawhi is a little bit injured, or a lot of bit injured. I don't trust playoff P, Paul George, to lead a team past Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. The Mavs, since the midseason trades, bringing in Gafford, bringing in PJ Washington, have played at a clip that would have had them as the number one seed. They're a different team. I love this Mavs team. We did a whole show on Luka and Kyrie, for goodness sakes. And I'm willing to ride that forward and say Mavs in 6.
Yeah, I'll go with you on that, actually, man. I'll say Mavs in 6.
Solid agreement at the end.
Yeah. I think that we should end on a note of agreement here. No, I would have had Dallas winning this series anyway. I just have not believed in the Clippers. I know it's an incredible amount of star power, and it hasn't just been names. They had a very good year after a super rocky start. They turned it around, and for about a month, they looked like the best team in the West. And then since then, they haven't.
Yeah.
I think, Leonard's health is always a question. Definitely a question as to his availability and effectiveness at the start of this series. I know Kawhi is a legendary playoff performer, but those legendary playoff performances are more and more in the rear view. It's been a while now since he looked like the best guy to have going into the postseason. Never been a Paul George believer. Mm-hmm. Never, ever considered him on the level and in the company that everybody else seems to consider him in. Really nice player. On any given possession can look like the best player I've ever seen. But those are possessions. And Harden, an all-time great player, and has actually, considering he had crazy scoring streaks just a few seasons ago, the fact that he seems content to sometimes put up 5 shots a game, get 11 assists in a win, and concede the spotlight and the statistics to other Hall of Fame level players is certainly to his credit. But again, as has been my pattern here with these predictions, I go on feel and I go on preference, as you do, of course. But for me, again, sometimes it flies in the face of what we've seen and of the sample sizes. But as we talked about just recently, yeah, the Mavs are playing great ball at the right time. With if you want to talk about the top of the teams, I think Dallas is going in with the two players playing best.
Of course.
We've talked about what an explosive combination they've been and they are right now. Maybe the two best guys to have together in the on any team. I'm not going to go as far as propelling Dallas to the final, but I have them winning this series.
So we're out of time. Your timing's perfect. We got to come back together and talk about the second round when that's good to go. But as of right now, sounds like you've got the 76ers and the T-Wolves in the finals.
No, I don't.
Oh.
I have the Timberwolves and the Celtics in the finals.
Wow. You've got the Celtics and T-Wolves in the finals. I would watch that.
Yes.
Know who I'd root
and for. I got a bad taste in my mouth just admitting that. But, you know, it's a matter of public record, so...
Yeah, my public record has a Knicks-Mavs final. We'll see how that goes. The Garden will be rocking. But for everybody listening, yo, please stay frosty. For Arya Shirazi, I'm Dave Zirin. And for The Nation Magazine, we are out of here. Peace.